when are we starting our spin-off podcast about calorie and macro tracking?
Oh, yeah, probably soon, although I'm not good at it, apparently, so.
You're probably fine.
Howdy, it's Wednesday, March 6th, 2024, and this is episode 223 of Due for a Win, the Atlantic City podcast. I'm Kyle Askin, joined, as always, by Craig Stone. What's good, Craig?
1 week between episodes. Rare.
Rare. Very rare.
Wasn't rare back in, like, 2017.
Oh, yeah. Very common, then.
But, yeah, recently, quite rare.
I have to say we've been quite regular at 2 weeks, though.
We have.
It's not like it was, you know, during our new baby time where it's like, you know, once a month or whatever.
Yeah, we're consistent, especially when compared to the rest of the casino podcast space.
The rest of the Atlantic City casino podcast
space.
Yeah,
that's true. You can bet on that. It's very consistent.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. We have an always, once, never.
Mm-hmm.
Getting off the sort of games theme of the last two.
Didn't want to do the slot machine one?
No, I'm trying to think of the way to do
the third
slot
option.
In the funniest way possible.
All right.
But what I have for you this week is drinks that sort of either make your night go wrong or a sign that your night has already gone wrong.
Uh-huh.
Specific to us. Number one, strawberry daiquiri with whipped cream from any CET property. You can order it straight from a slot machine. It always gets a stare when it comes by. Like, the people around you at other slot machines are always sort of, like, giving you a little bit of a side eye because it's a ridiculous-looking drink.
It's only because they're jealous. It's jealousy in their eyes. It's not, like, judgment. It's just jealousy.
100%. Number two, the rusty nail at the B-Bar at Borgata.
Oof.
Our last trip was...
It was good.
Full of rusty nails. A very tasty drink, but...
It was... Yeah.
Mistakes were made. And then number three, the gallon of scotch at Golden Nugget. I believe that was Johnny Walker Black, right?
Johnny Walker Black, yes.
Pretty
Johnny
good
Walker
comped
Black.
Drink.
It's simply the best comp drink, I think, in AC, especially considering the just ridiculous quantity that we've gotten the last two times we've ordered it.
I mean, considering that you're based here, especially.
Right.
Like, if you're a rock royalty at Hard Rock, you can get some fancier scotches comped at the center bar if it's not a weekend.
It sounds so appealing when you put it that way.
Yes, I know. In very specific conditions, you can get good comps.
If you're the top-level player.
Yeah. Retired and up in the rafters and not included is the coldest Coors Light at the Showboat.
Indeed.
A true podcast legend.
Also retired, the 6-ounce cups of Miller Lite at the Showboat.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the coldest Coors Light at the Showboat was in the Asian room, right?
That's in the Asian room, where it's usually they'll do, like, one class better. That's why you get a bottle of beer instead of, like, an 8-ounce cup of beer.
Yeah, no little 6-ounce cups of Miller Lite. Well, Tropicana is trying to bring back the 6-ounce cups. So what do you got? One of these you have to drink every single trip.
Oh, God. So here's the problem. Well, there's a couple problems here. Like, one, do I want to be in the marina every trip? Right, so that's problem number one.
Yeah, I mean, strawberry daiquiri, you've got three CT options,
right.
So that makes simplicity's sake.
Absolutely much easier.
Yeah.
Okay, two, like, the gallon of scotch is absolutely incredible, and if you're in the right mood, there's nothing like it, I think, in AC, than just getting, like, legitimate...
6 ounces of scotch.
Four fingers of, you know, Johnny Walker Black for your tip, and that's it. Just for playing at literally any table.
That's true. Last time, the first one you ordered was not as huge.
That's true.
Which led to the mistake of the second one.
I'm like, yeah, give me another one. And then the second one was huge. And the first time we ordered, the first one was just legitimately like a full glass.
It was absurd. It was the biggest pour of scotch I've ever seen in my life.
Right. So there's nothing like that, but that is, like, legitimately a trip ruiner if that's
it's
not
a night
what
ender.
You want.
Yeah.
Like, it is. It's the end of the night, or in my case last time, the end of the afternoon, since it was, like, 3 o'clock, and I was just wasted.
And that's how you end up going and playing
Hexbreaker for 4 hours.
Hexbreaker for 4 hours, just completely out of your mind drunk.
Incredible. I think for me, despite it being in the marina, the Rusty Nail was legitimately an excellent drink. I enjoyed it a lot. Could I swing into Borgata every trip? I probably could. I think I'd say always for that. I'd say once more for gallon of scotch, just because, you know, it's a gallon of scotch. You got to do it. And though strawberry daiquiri with whipped cream is iconic, I could live with not having that ever again.
Yeah, I'm going purely convenience. I'm going always strawberry daiquiri with whipped cream. I also think there is a novelty to it where it's like, oh, this is the drink I have in AC.
It is. I never have that outside of AC.
Whereas like a Rusty Nail, like I can make that at home just as good as at B-Bar. I don't really need to have that ever again, I don't think. Although, I mean, if you're at B-Bar, it's a very good option.
Uh-huh.
And then gallon of scotch, that's a definite once more, I think.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think that's like the absolute epitome of what once more is, because you know there's a time that you're going to just have a gallon of scotch.
Yeah. So we both went gallon of scotch once more. I think that's the right choice. And then we picked different things. The other two drinks, really, like you absolutely can have those always. Like it's not, we're not saying you got to have five of them, right?
Right.
So you can just go have one and that's fine. And you've done your always.
Swing by Borgata on the way into town or whatever. Have a Rusty Nail. Play a little bit of Curse video poker.
You can't commit to the gallon of scotch every single time. Like you just can't do it.
You can't. No, absolutely not.
I have to say.
But you have to have it once more. You have to.
So we stayed at Golden Nugget last March.
Uh-huh.
It's been a year.
It's been a year.
I have been having a lot of fondness for Golden Nugget in my recent thoughts about Atlantic City. And I don't know why, because I definitely didn't leave that trip super happy about Golden Nugget.
Right.
But they've added Dos Caminos, which I think is probably pretty good. I think if I went in better prepared, like, oh, okay, I'm going to go to see one of the like crappy cover bands on a Friday night or whatever it is.
Right. You said that was your big mistake was not seeing the band earlier in the night, right?
Yeah.
And my big mistake was drinking a gallon of scotch.
Right. And also, like, we talked about the walkways. Like, it is very easy to get to Harrah's. So it's not as separated from the other casinos as it is in my mind. So you can just pop over to a different casino.
Can walk right down Maryland Ave and get to the boardwalk.
That's true. So I do want to give Golden Nugget another chance, maybe after they do the room renovations.
I think me and you, the next time it's a trip with just the two of us, we should seriously consider Golden Nugget.
Yeah, I do get, I said Sunday through Thursday I actually get Sunday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not bad. I feel like most of our trips are Friday nights anyway.
Yeah, with the possible exception of maybe an upcoming trip in May. Yeah, I think the Friday night is the big night for us to go.
True. One update from last episode, we talked about the ACX1, the studios that are out at the Playground Pier that they're setting up. I did confirm via Philly Inquirer, I looked up their article when the ACX1 was announced, that ACX1 is leasing the property from Caesars.
Uh-huh.
So we talked about what that meant for parking, the parking situation for restaurants, such as the Simpson Restaurant and Bar. So maybe they'll validate parking at Caesars. I have no idea.
Maybe.
But they should.
I mean, it would be a good thing.
It would be a good thing. I feel the need, because I ended up looking through all the resorts this morning. That was how I spent my morning.
Uh-huh.
In looking at all the resorts, I noticed that I now have no nights comped at Borgata ever.
Ever?
Ever.
Not
None.
Even like some, you know, Tuesday night in, in March or whatever.
Tuesday night in March, nothing.
Hmm.
And you have like every night in March and April comped, right?
Yeah, I mean, I sent you my May calendar and it was basically everything was comped except for three random Saturdays and the Sunday of Memorial Day.
Right. So my initial thought was like, oh, I've been downgraded to gold and maybe gold is
Sapphire.
CET's base pass, but yeah, base status. Sapphire, MGM's base status.
Yep.
And maybe there's something to it. Like maybe there is just like a gold level, but you are also Sapphire and have all comps. Yep. So it makes no sense. Like I earned plenty of tier credits and rewards credits last trip. So I'm not really sure what changed in that time. Although you are positing that the Vegas stuff maybe got incorporated, which I absolutely stayed multiple nights at Vidara and played almost none at MGM Properties in Vegas.
I would think it wouldn't take 10 months for them to integrate that, but we are talking about MGM IT, so one never knows. I also posited that they put you on the blacklist for complaining about your $75, and then after complaining legitimately nonstop for hours, you know, you didn't even come back and pick it up.
Yeah. That's the only other thing I can think of is I went to the desk like three times and they have that thing. Like, wasn't there a cable company or a phone company that, like, if you called multiple times, they just put you on like a blacklist, like you're too annoying a customer, like that I'm that to Borgata now.
Maybe.
It's very odd.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why I would have every night comped and you have no nights comped. It's strange.
It's frustrating.
Well, good thing we're exclusive Golden Nugget players now.
Yeah. I bet if we were exclusive Golden Nugget player, well, you already get every night comped, but I would start to get every night comped.
Yeah,
they're pretty generous with the comps.
Yep,
pretty generous. Oh, no, I get $20 free play. I said I don't get any free play, but I do get $20 free play.
From MGM or
Golden Nugget?
Oh, yeah, I get like $100 still, I think, many days.
Speaking of, I haven't gotten a mailer from Borgata in a while, and I used to get, you know, like $75 free play, all this stuff. They really are, they're done with me. They are done with me. That sucks.
Yeah.
Got to go in and use my $45 in comps and get out. The other thing that I noticed is I could not check my comps at Hard Rock because I have two Unity accounts, both under the same email address, because I had, as we've mentioned, the Unity account that's through the Hard Rock Cafe and,
of course,
a Wildcard Rewards account also under the same email address. And when I try to log in at Hard Rock, it can't rectify those things. So it just says that it doesn't recognize my password. And so I've been locked out of my account entirely.
Good.
So I still get emails from Hard Rock saying, like, you can get Sunday through Thursday. But, like, I can't actually do anything about that, apparently, until they connect the accounts. So that's good.
I think that's amazing.
So that probably, until they connect those things, like, I probably am not going to stay at Hard Rock, right? Like, what am I going to do? Call? Get out of here.
So did you try logging in with your account number as well instead of just your email address?
Good question. No, I entered my account number. It says invalid login credentials. Can't do it.
Get absolutely wrecked.
Yeah, I can't get in. Good times. Good times for everyone. I'll have to try to look at that later. But the reason I was looking at all these comped rooms or attempting to look at comped rooms was that I finally, after a full year, have updated the list of resort fees. So I will say thank you to the two people who emailed over the course of the last few months saying that things have been updated. Virginia D emailed about Ocean's increase in resort fees. Keith S emailed about Borgata's increase in resort fees. I will say Bally's is unchanged at $37.08. Caesars, Harrah's, and Tropicana are unchanged at $39.35. And this is after the state taxes and fees. So there's like $7.54 in state taxes and fees.
Mm-hmm.
The CET properties, Caesars, Harrah's, Trop, still the kings of the resort fee, the highest resort fee. But they have some closer competition now. Resorts has raised the resort fee from $35.97 to $38.23.
That sounds like a lot for resorts.
And that is now the second highest, well, fourth, I guess, because CET is
still the
highest.
CET properties, yeah.
And then just behind them is Ocean, who's raised theirs from $36 to $38. Hard Rock only 36 cents behind them at $37.64.
Which is completely not shown on the checkout page, right?
Hard Rock, yes, is very frustrating because it says $30.10 is the total. It says it is the final total, but it says in a little green bar at the top that $7.54 will be collected at check-in at the hotel. It's so annoying that they don't put it in the total.
That is truly awful.
So they're $37.64. Borgata's $36 even, up $6.01 from $29.99. So that's very disappointing. And then Golden Nugget is $32, up from $30. And I believe that is now the lowest. Nobody's under $30. And I will add, for posterity's sake, Showboat, $25.59.
What excuse do they have for charging a resort fee?
It's as resort can be. What are you talking about? It's not a casino, but it's got all sorts of other stuff. I was completely unsurprised when I got charged a resort fee for booking a Showboat.
Got that ace, got to pay for that. It's not paying for itself.
Also, if you calculate the tax out, the like 13.625 tax, It doesn't quite add up because it's always an extra dollar on top of that at Showboat. So I'm guessing there's some state fee. Like they don't get – I don't think they get hit with the other $7.54 in fees, but I'm guessing there's like a dollar fee somewhere else in there, or they're just screwing you out of a dollar. But those are the new resort fees. I have updated the website. You should go to our website and look at them. Although who knows, maybe there won't be resort fees anymore once the government gets their hands on it.
Yeah, maybe. That would be good. I mean, I think I've long been a proponent on the podcast that that is something that only government regulation can fix. This is not a problem that could ever fix itself in the market, I think, because the incentives are just too strong to tack them on if some of your competitors are doing it. So I'm all for some rules that say that you cannot charge resort fees. All pricing must be all in. And some hotels are going that way. Certainly, I think Marriott's and Hyatt's now, by default, kind of show you all-in pricing when you go to their websites. I don't know about OTAs, if it shows there or not. But
what are OTAs?
Online travel agencies like Expedia, Kayak, etc. The reason that these resort fees exist, I think, basically.
So that all the hotels can show up as the cheapest, and then they're like, ha-ha, $58 a night in resort fees.
Yep.
Also, I've booked several flights for this year, and let me tell you, the fees on flights make the fees on hotels look like nothing.
A lot of those are taxes and stuff. Well, especially if you're going international fees and stuff. Oh, sure, sure. Just don't check bags.
I did see an article saying that the airline industry made $33 billion in baggage fees in 2023.
If you're like me and do a, you know, 5-day Las Vegas trip with only a backpack, so you don't have to pay for carry-on or check bag, it'll all be fine.
I don't know if I talked about this on the episode where we talked about Vegas, but my big screw-up was I booked my flights separately, like far apart from each other. Like, I booked one because it was really cheap. I booked my return flight on Spirit. They do like a package. They're like, oh, if you pay for a seat selection and the carry-on, it's like this set price. It's cheaper than booking than paying for both of them separately. So I did that, and then I booked my flight out on United Basic Economy and paid for a checked bag on the flight out because it was cheaper than the carry-on, which is, you know, always makes total sense. Actually, checked bags probably should be cheaper than carry-ons.
Right.
But I was only thinking about the flight out when I packed. So I was just like, well, I've got a checked bag. I'll just bring my duffel bag. Too big for a carry-on duffel bag, even though I don't need that much space. And then as I checked into my return flight on the last day, I'm looking at it, and I was like, why does it say I only have a carry-on? Seems bad. And then I had to pay an extra $60 to check my bag.
So you did not. This is the first I've heard of this. But yeah. That is good.
So that was very frustrating. I should have just like gotten a garbage bag and thrown out my duffel bag.
Yeah, if it's a duffel bag, I mean, if you can squish it into that.
No,
hole?
It's got a hard bottom.
Yeah. Well,
it's got like rails on the bottom. Yeah, I was screwed. So that was very annoying. I was very mad about that. Adding to the expense of an already ridiculously expensive Vegas trip.
You can only blame yourself.
So next week I'm going to the West Coast, and I really like made sure. It's like, okay, let's not screw this up. It's carry-ons both directions on that trip.
Mm-hmm. Duffel bag time.
Yeah. Free carry-ons both directions at that trip. No basic economy.
My goodness.
One. Yeah, high roller.
What strange airline are you flying? Is it Air Canada or is it?
Alaska on the way out and Air Canada on the way back.
There you go.
Got a lot of Nintendo Switch time in my future. Mm-hmm. 2 5-plus-hour flights.
Yep.
And a 4-hour train ride.
Your flight home might be a little bit less than 5, but...
It's from Vancouver, though.
Yeah. Should be fine.
All right.
Resort fees are expensive and bad.
That's true.
It seems excessive for Atlantic City, being what it is, but...
Everything in the 30s.
Everything in the 30s, except for Showboat, truly, the savior.
Yeah. Who's going to crack $40 first?
CET.
You think?
I think so.
It's certainly the safest bet because they're already at $39.35, I think, right? That's the amount that I said. Yeah,
they've been over $40 in Vegas for quite a long time, right?
Yeah, and they and Bally's are the only two that haven't updated their resort fee in the last year. Mm-hmm. So certainly I would think, you know, any minute from now that thing's going to be like, oh, it's $42
That's would be my guess. Caesars, the CET properties being $42.
Now that I'm base status, though, like, I mean, I've been base status at Caesars for a long time. $42, like if you have a comped room at Trop and you can only get like Chelsea or West Tower, I'm not going to pay $42 for that room.
I mean, if it's the only rooms you can get.
I would rather pay like 100 and whatever to stay at a decent room than to pay $42 to stay at.
I mean, it depends on what the pricing is. You know, if the only option is like $800 at Ocean or whatever, they price their rooms on the weekends.
That's a good point. Also, you know, I will pay $39.35, but $42 is a bridge too far.
Absolutely not. I mean, I paid many resort fees in my time because back before it was a CET property, I used to stay at Trop a lot. And I think Trop Gold did not waive resort fees. So,
Anyways, we've dragged on the resort fee conversation long enough.
Yep.
We got a mailbag question following up on our discussion last episode where we talked about the things we'd add to Atlantic City to make it better. And one of the big things we talked about was adding restaurants specifically on the boardwalk and trying to replace some of the t-shirt shops and put some nice stuff on the boardwalk to make the boardwalk a bit nicer.
Yeah.
We got an email from Blake F., I think a very astute email from Blake F., who also first said that he enjoys the podcast.
Thank you, by the way, for sending me the recap of all the nice emails after I complained last episode.
You're welcome. So I'm going to break it up into a few sections to discuss, even though he calls it a quick question. Quick question. Why do you think restaurants would want to open on the boardwalk in AC? Many would be at a major disadvantage when competing against casinos that have subsidized restaurants that are not inherently in the business of making money or can give away free meals or free buffets like Borgata and Hard Rock. So let's start with that.
That's definitely true. It's a big problem. I mean, if when we were talking about our discussion of the 1986 show about Atlantic City, the full hour special that they had on CBS or whatever, like that was a big thing that came up. They talked a lot about the restaurants that were put out of business because they cannot compete with subsidized food, obviously. If you can eat for free at a casino or spend real money to eat at a restaurant, yeah, it's bad for the restaurants, right? And a lot of what I was saying is that right now, I don't think it makes sense for restaurants to open on the boardwalk in AC, hence the subsidizing that would be necessary or whatever. I mean, with that said, I think there have been reasonably successful restaurants that have opened in Atlantic City. Like I know I mentioned Rife last episode, or Tennessee Avenue Beer Hall, the Beer Garden, which is actually on the boardwalk and right next to it, Bungalow. So
yeah, Cardinal, Rhythm and Spirits.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cardinal's brand new.
Right. So, yeah, we don't
know if it's super successful or not, given that that Beret closed. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of the reason you do need these subsidies. And I don't know for sure that this is going to be something that succeeds, but for someone the CRDA scale, like I think it's a pretty inexpensive experiment to run to see like if this does help, if this does make a difference and make the boardwalk a more pleasant place.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll say is that I think the casinos have gone away from totally subsidizing food in a way. I mean, I don't think it's like 1986 anymore. It's harder to get free parking now than it was. There was the whole thing in that video about, like, how can I compete
with
parking?
Not at CET.
Right, but, like, you do have to play to get free parking. Like, people like, complain about the parking fees at all the casinos.
5 tier credits or whatever, 10 tier credits.
You know, we see with the seasonality of restaurants, we see with the closing of restaurants, you know, they do still comp buffets to players, like to, I mean, you've got to play a decent amount to get the comp buffet, but it's no longer like, oh, here's the $8.99 steak special or the dollar shrimp cocktail kind of thing. The restaurants are fairly expensive now in the casinos. So I don't think that the casinos are in the game of really taking a loss on the food or even coming close. I mean, I've seen in the Facebook group some people say like, oh, this is so annoying that this restaurant is only seasonal now. And you get the response from people, including casino people, who are like, well, what are they supposed to do? Run it at a loss? And it's like, well, that was kind of always the bargain, right? Like that was kind of always the thing of like, you're going to come into the casino and we're going to like take some losses on these other things. So to get you in the door, and now they're just, it's totally a business. They're not willing to do that. They're not willing to take a huge loss on the restaurants. They just don't do that anymore. You know, buffets have mostly closed. I don't think the environment is quite the same. I mean, I still think it's a tough battle for boardwalk restaurants because the inertia of the casino wants to keep you in the casino. And I sort of hinted at that in the post show of last episode where I was looking at a picture from the 60s. When AC was very down and needed a change and, you know, was still 10 years away from getting casino gambling. But there's still a ton of people on the boardwalk in the summer. And now the casinos just bring everyone off the boardwalk, right? Mm-hmm. So that's tough for the restaurants, too, when there are so many restaurants in the casinos. Because, like, if you're staying at Tropicana and there's, like, 10 restaurants in Tropicana, it's so easy just to pick one of those restaurants. Especially if you've got some sort of like, you know, $25 food voucher or whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, it's a very good point and I think it is an issue, but I do think it's less of an issue than it was like 20 or 25 years ago.
I think maybe you're underselling it a little bit. I mean, I still personally, I get a lot of comps when I go to casinos, so it still is like more or less free for me to eat in the casino. I mean, I think we're a bit different because we don't eat in the casinos as much as other people tend to, just because we're interested in going out and seeing what else there is out there. But like, certainly could we have gone to Amphora all the time or whatever, which we famously do not do. Like we could have, but we don't. But I think it's still a little bit subsidized compared to outside casinos, obviously. But, you know, I think it's part of a big change. And I know Chuck Muster used to talk about this on Vegas Tripping, that, you know, the casinos did change from the old style view that was espoused by Steve Wynn in the show that we watched. Of, you know, like the gambling subsidizing everything to trying to figure out how to maximize like the dollars received by like every individual square foot. And, you know, the casinos changed into a real estate company. And, you know, this was usually when Chuck was talking about it, like had to do with like the big nightclubs that really were just like raking in money. And they realized that, hey, this can be like as profitable as slot machines or whatever. So there has been some change in how casinos look at this, I think, but there still is a lot of free meals that are available for even mid-level players like me in the casinos. So,
but you do have to play.
You have to play.
A decent amount. Like, you're getting much better comps than a lot of people who go to Atlantic City.
Sure, but I think that it is true. The days that, like, some grandma can go and, like, not gamble a dime and get, like, her $1.99 steak dinner, like, yes, those are over. And those are over forever, I think. Like, that's not coming back, but I think there's still, like, plenty of people who can get at least deeply discounted food in casinos.
And probably, to support your point, the grandma who's playing slots, she's probably valuing, like, her $10 off food voucher as a full $10 and, like, is going to use that rather than going and getting the same meal at some non-casino restaurant.
For $10 cheaper out on the boardwalk.
Right, yeah. So that's the first part of the question. Second part. In regards to high-quality restaurants, how many independently owned restaurants have even been on the boardwalk since the 70s? Very few, if any. Even the Knife and Fork closed in the 90s. Obviously, it reopened. So I actually did not know that it closed in the 90s. This was before my time going to Atlantic City. Obviously, everybody knows that it's been open since the early 1900s. So I looked it up on their About Us page. The Latz family owned Knife and Fork since 1927, and the page says, as Mac Latz approached 80, he decided to retire from the grueling restaurant business. Unfortunately, Mac's attempt to find a buyer for the Knife and Fork was unsuccessful, and the historic restaurant closed in 1997. 2 years later, Mac's son Andrew leased the restaurant, reopening it in 1999. By 2003, however, Mac once again decided to find a buyer for the Knife and Fork, and he ended up selling to the Dougherty family. So that is why it's now owned by the Dougherty family. I actually thought that the Dougherty family always owned both. Like, it had always been Knife and Fork and Doc's. That is not the case. They only came together under the same ownership in 2003. So that's interesting. But yeah, I didn't know it closed for 2 years. And obviously, my guess is that this About Us is sort of painting a rosier picture of why it closed. Of like, yeah, he wanted to retire and not like maybe it wasn't doing amazing in the 90s because of all the casino restaurants that were around.
Yeah, probably a little bit of both, I'd guess.
But, you know, it's back open now and it's doing seemingly pretty well. Back to what Blake says, I think Steve and Cookies in Margate does well because it's located a distance from AC and high-end clientele would probably not want to walk the boardwalk. At least casino restaurants can keep guests secluded from the public. So these are higher, like Knife and Fork, Doc's, Steve and Cookies are like upscale. And I think maybe a higher scale than you were talking about when you said nice restaurants on the boardwalk.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah,
want to
yeah.
speak for you, but you know, like Rife is not a terribly fancy restaurant. It's nice,
no,
but it's
no.
not fancy.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice, but like I certainly went in a t-shirt and shorts and no one looked at me like sideways or whatever in a way that like I felt a bit out of place when I went into Knife and Fork in my t-shirt.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is some sort of close to the boardwalk stuff. Like we mentioned all the Orange Loop stuff, Tennessee Avenue Beer Hall. I mean, Bungalow is on the boardwalk.
And Bungalow is pretty nice, I think.
Yeah. So I think there is some like non-casino owned stuff. I do feel the need to point out that nothing can kill the Rainforest Cafe. Obviously, it was
it's hanging
long,
in there,
long part of a casino and is not independently owned. It's owned by the company that owns Golden Nugget. But it's crazy that that still survives because it just like seems such a disconnect between who's coming to Atlantic City and who's going.
You said when you were going to try to go there, it was crazy, right? So you couldn't.
Yeah, it's packed.
No, that's incredible. To answer the question, I don't really know of any, you know, high quality independent restaurants that are like literally on the boardwalk. I certainly can't think of any that have been opened since the 70s. Beyond stuff in the pier that's like boardwalk adjacent, I guess. And those are very high quality restaurants when that existed. But like outside of casinos, outside of the pier, like I can't think of a whole lot. Obviously, I know they existed back, say, in the 70s and before. There you can see the pictures of just tons of restaurants on the boardwalk, right? But I understand the idea behind people not wanting to walk to the boardwalk to get there. But I don't know, if you go to Docks or whatever now, the way it's set up is you park in the valet lot next door. They look at you and they're like, oh, you have to like hurry out of the lot and like hurry into the restaurant. They act like, you know, you're in a war zone or whatever when you're there, the employees at the Docks Valet. And I don't think it like takes away from Docks at all. Certainly, I don't think people are necessarily walking in off the street there. So I don't know if this is like a huge problem or not. But I think that high-end clientele not wanting to walk the boardwalk, like, that is correct now, and that's the problem that I think if we want, like, not even high-end clientele, but, like, more people getting on the boardwalk would be a good thing for the city, and that's what we want to push for as much as we can. And I do agree, it doesn't happen now, and, like, I've said that even I am, like, not totally comfortable all the time walking around the boardwalk right now, which is a bad sign.
Yeah, I mean, I expect, if we go in May, I expect the boardwalk to be a little more crowded than it
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The boardwalk should be fine in May.
But yeah, like certainly in the winter, like when I took my family in November and then I was walking out of Hard Rock at 2 a.m, just like, this is probably not the best time to be out solo on the boardwalk. Again, not that I think we're having an argument, like defending ourselves too much here. Just, I think it's a good conversation. You know, we talked about like, this is why you would subsidize these long term, right? Is to try to build up the nicer boardwalk.
Right. That's the goal.
So to that point, he asks, if the restaurants were subsidized for some time, what would keep them from just packing up shop soon after the subsidy expired?
Nothing. So this sort of thing happens all the time in, say, like airlines where, you know, the federal government subsidizes flights to small airports, or individual states will subsidize flights to some of their bigger airports if they want to try to increase tourism, or countries will do that as well. I mean, certainly a lot of the reason me and my wife, we did our honeymoon in Turkey, and like a lot of the reason is just like flights to Turkey are like dirt cheap because, you know, the Turkish government wants to subsidize tourism there. So,
yeah, I mean, for a while, like Vegas flights were super cheap.
Right.
I mean, I know a bunch of people who went to Iceland because for some reason, like Iceland.
Right. That's also very cheap. Yep. And if it doesn't make sense for these restaurants to stay open and, you know, the CRDA or whoever is giving these grants maybe are happy enough, like that's fine if they close back down after the subsidy ends.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the pipe dream is they're subsidized long enough that it spruces up the boardwalk and makes it nicer, and all of a sudden everything's just a bit nicer.
Right.
And so now they can survive without the subsidies.
Right. I mean, I know right now, like I've recently in the last month read an article about how the city of Brisbane in Australia is subsidizing like tons of flights from the US right now. I think that the open market, there would be zero flights from Delta, American, and United to Brisbane if they weren't getting these huge subsidies. But who knows if it's going to lead to more tourism there and actually building some demand for people to come there and for a few flights to stick around when the subsidies stop. But I don't think it should be a reason to stop this. I mean, at the end of the day, the CRDA gets this money, in theory, for the betterment of the city, right? Even though I think they treat it now as, like, for the betterment of the casinos. And, like, the problem with my plan is the CRDA would never want to try to get people, like, onto the boardwalk necessarily out of the casinos, because the casinos would complain about it, I think.
Right. Like, the idea that the CRDA, which has casino people on its board, would subsidize restaurants that are not inside casinos.
Right.
Is probably laughable as much as it would make so much sense for the city, and is probably like CRDA is meant to do.
Let's say like resorts, given that they're next to Ocean and Hard Rock, they're probably happy if people are walking around on the boardwalk a bit more, but like Ocean and Hard Rock, they don't want that. Like Caesars does not want people to go walk around on the boardwalk. Like obviously the marina casinos have literal zero to gain and just everything to lose from this. So
yeah. And this is sort of the point that, some of the casinos, I feel like every year an article comes out where some casino executive says something about like, well, the city really needs to like clean up its part and make the city safer, because that's really what's going to like save the city long term. But also like the casino is doing things that are actively against that. Like they, right. You know, I've always sort of said like, well, the casino could do something to invest in that also. But it's not just that they need to invest in it. It's that they're like actively trying to keep other parts of Atlantic City from becoming an attraction, right? So you know, they are saying these things, but they're also like doing things that are not keeping that from happening in the long term.
I don't know if I fully agree with that or not. I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk of like creating this like tourist district or whatever, right, in the CRDA, and that like involves like a lot of, I don't know, Atlantic or Pacific or whatever avenue, and the plus the boardwalk.
Yeah, Pacific.
But like, to me, that seems like a bit more far-fetched than like, why don't we just start with the boardwalk and make the boardwalk a bit more pleasant, and then we can move to, you know, the other streets in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And I think also like, it must be said that the state runs the city, so they can't do anything. Like,
yeah,
the state runs the city, so.
One other thing about the subsidies that I'll say is you see in a lot of, like, small towns in, especially, I know, in New York State, they have subsidized a lot of little restaurants and little, I listened to a whole podcast talking about the, like, economics of this, basically with the idea that, like, they're going to try to create a little downtown and attract a tax base and attract people to come there.
Right.
And then hopefully they don't need to subsidize it long term.
Laurel subsidizes Main Street. So.
Right. So, like whether that works long term or not, we don't know.
But. I mean, yeah, I don't think it's worked so far for the city I live in Laurel, but yeah, they do. Like, if you want cheap rent, you can go to Main Street because it's partially subsidized by the city government, I think. I'm not saying that, like, my idea is right and, like, restaurants on the boardwalk are what Atlantic City needs, but, you know, ideas like that. I think getting people out onto the boardwalk, it would be, like, a net benefit for the city. And, like, long-term, it would be a net benefit for the casinos, too. I don't know whether or not they would see that or believe that, but, like, I do think it would be.
Yeah, but there, I mean, these are all completely valid questions and like tough questions that there are.
Yeah,
no,
it was a great question.
Yeah, so thank you, Blake, for sending that in. Very good.
Great question.
Excellent questions. Because I'm sure there are a lot of people listening to this, especially who are like interested in casino business and in Casino Town, sort of saying like, you can't do this. Like, this will never fly.
Yeah. I've never been to Stephen Cookies, but I looked at the website and it looks good. We should check it out.
In Margate, near Lucy the Elephant.
Yeah. It's like on the Bayside or whatever. But
so we have some questions also from Pat G that have been in the mailbox since January 10th, almost 2 months. Want to go through some of those?
So Pat G asks, at the inception, did it occur to either of you that due for a win beyond Gambler's Fallacy is also appropriate for AC itself? That hit me recently. I can't stop thinking about how clever the name is. I mean, I know it was like a running joke between us, but I don't remember the exact genesis of the name beyond just the Gambler's Fallacy joke.
Yeah, no, I think we were just constantly making the joke to each other about like a team being due for a win or like us being due for a win. And
and like they always said, like non-ironically, that baseball players were due sort of when we were growing up and watching baseball.
Certainly when we created the name, I did not think about it as being relevant to Atlantic City. In trying to think of a t-shirt 2.0 idea, I did think like, oh, it is kind of relevant to Atlantic City. Like you could do something like, you know, Atlantic City is due for a win. Due for a win is Atlantic City or something like that. But I think that's too much of a downer about Atlantic City. But it is relevant. It certainly
It
is relevant.
It's true.
So it has not escaped me since then, but it is not something we were thinking about at the time.
I agree. Yeah, I don't think it was something that we had in mind specifically. Just I think it was mostly a Gambler's Fallacy or Gambler's Reality.
Yes, the truth.
Indeed. Unimpeachable truth.
I'm definitely due for a winning trip.
I mean, if you're way down, don't you have to start winning to go back to your expected value?
It's correct.
That's right. Anyway, I've been listening to You Can Bet on That. Those guys are great. Like older, heavier versions of you and Kyle. That's not kind. With less hair and more bankroll. That's. I mean, the more bankroll is kind, I guess. But that aside, was it Dr. Mike that Kyle played craps with once in Baltimore Inner Harbor? Or was that Dr. Dave from UNLV? I know it was a doctor. I just can't recall who. If it was Dr. Mike, I'd love to hear a recap from Kyle. Leslie, have either of you met Mark or Dr. Mike? You probably should have asked that question, but that's fine.
Yeah, I have met neither.
It was Dr. Mike that I played craps with once in National Harbor outside of D.C. at the MGM property there. And it was great. I think my recap at the time was, so I was going there to meet him. This was after work. It was a weeknight. And by the time I got to National Harbor, which is quite far away from like Rockville, Gaithersburg, where I worked, literally the other side of Washington, D.C., he was playing at a $50 table, which was like, I'd never played at a $50 craps table before, and I probably have not played at a $50 craps table since that time either. So I was like quite nervous, but I was like, you know what, whatever. I got enough money for like two rolls. You know, I'll do it. I'll chat with them afterwards. It'll be fine. We had a crazy run, and it was my biggest winning gambling session ever, I think, even to this day. So I think that the first two rollers, of which I was the second, we both had absolute monster rolls. And, you know, I was up like many, many, many thousands of dollars. And then it was like, you know, pretty even or down for the rest of the night after that. But I still managed to cash out something like $2,400, $2,500 from my $500 buy-in, which was all the money that I brought with me to go there. So it was like a $2,000 win, which was good.
If you had to guess an episode number for when that was, what would you guess?
It was certainly before the pandemic, way before the pandemic. I would guess something around like in the 80s, but I have no idea. That's just a wild guess.
41. April of 2017.
I thought it was like maybe more 2018, 2019. Sure. 41.
If you want to hear a full recap of that, go back to episode 41. It is called The Poker Episode, kind of.
And I know that they talked about it on You Can Bet on That as well after I met up with Dr. Mike. So it was good. Dr. Mike was how he sounds on the podcast. It was absolutely wonderful to meet him and play craps with him, and especially nice that we had such a big win.
But neither of us have met Mark from You Can Bet on That. Right?
Nope, I've never met Mark. So they weren't there when you went to the Zorkfest, right?
No. Mm-hmm. All right, a few more questions. Pat says, I'm almost done with David G. Schwartz's Boardwalk Playground. I really enjoy it. Have been reading it on and off since Christmas of 2022, kind of like your speed on a slot machine. I read a couple books at a time, and this one has been back burner in spurts. Have you both read it? Have you read any of Dr. Dave's other tomes?
So for me, I have read Boardwalk Playground.
Same.
And I thought it was very good. I know we've talked about this in past episodes as well. If you're interested in the city of City of Atlantic, I guess, as the Twitter is called. If you're interested in Atlantic City, I highly recommend it. I mean, it's like short stories that are compiled together into a book, more or less, or, you know, articles, I guess, in the case of Dr. Dave. But yeah, it's super interesting. I don't think I've read too much of his other stuff. I know you have read some of his other stuff, right?
I've read some of his other articles, but I haven't read any of his other books, and I have them all in a, like, Amazon wish list, and I've just haven't bought them.
You need to put it up.
I know. I'm not.
People will buy those for you.
That's true. I'm not a big reader, honestly. Like, I just don't. My speed of reading is probably similar to Pat G's. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, Boardwalk Playground, absolutely, you can read it that way. Like, you can just sort of pick it up and read whatever interests you out of it, which is really nice, like, for the way that I, you know, with kids and other responsibilities, like, but this is, like, perfect for that. Certainly, you know, there's, like, Roll the Bones, which is a history of gambling. There's a bunch of Vegas history books that he has. And, yeah, I should really check those out, but I have not read any of the other ones. And then the last one, do you have a quote list for the show? I have a few in my head, like, more like due for a refund, but wasn't sure if you had a list going on.
That is a good one.
We don't have a list. Again, thinking about the t-shirt thing, I've thought of a few things just because of that. But, I mean, I think we have sort of some running things that we say over and over again, like deploy the capital dollars, although we haven't said that in a while. And we missed a chance last episode talking about Golden Nugget.
Golden Nugget. Yeah, terrible. They are deploying the capital dollars.
Certainly calling people friend of the podcast.
Yep.
I mean, more like due for a refund was a review. So some of the reviews have been funny. I think when reviewing any mid restaurant or hotel room or anything, say it's fine or it was fine. And our friend Dave will regularly send that to me on Google Chat when he's been to something that is also fine.
If you just think about it, you know, the way normal distributions work, like 80% of stuff should be fine.
That's true.
You should be saying that a lot.
That's a good point. Mm. Do you have anything else that sort of comes up that we've said regularly? I mean, Sounds Good, which was like the title of one of the episodes.
Friend of the podcast is the one I use the most, I think, when we talk about various people that are very specifically not friends of the podcast.
Not necessarily, you know, like enemies of the podcast.
No. But they, you know, aren't interested in being friends of the podcast. I mean, who knows? Maybe friend of the podcast, Donald J. Trump would like to be friend of the podcast, but we just haven't asked. Atlantic City Maven.
So the other one that I think we just sort of chat to each other all the time is, do I smell bankruptcy?
Yeah, so people wouldn't know this one because it was put in as a feedback from the website. So I don't think it's even published anywhere. But
have we read it on the show? I have it right here. I'll read it to you.
All right, read it. Truly one of the most unhinged and wonderful things that have ever been written to us.
His name is D. That's all he gave us for a name.
That's enough.
I am assuming, and it's relevant because we talked about the updated resort fees, so maybe he'll email again. D, if you're out there.
We want to hear from you.
I would love an updated version of this.
Yes, I don't know enough about Turning Stone. I need to hear more.
Stick your taxes and resort fees in your ass. We'll stay at TS Casino, Turning Stone. No bogus resort fees or tourism tax or other bogus fees. Hope you drown in the Atlantic and choke on your fees. Do I smell bankruptcy? 90% of that was in caps. Everything starting with TS Casino is in caps for the full experience. You really have to see it. I mean, resort fees are annoying. I don't know why he's hoping that, I don't know, I or you or both specifically drown in the Atlantic and choke on our fees. They're not our fees.
Yeah, because we're working for the casinos.
We do every now and again get an email on the contact form that's like, I stayed at your hotel and I got mischarged. Can you please tell me how to handle this? But I think part of it's that if you Google Atlantic City resort fees, it makes us look very official in that we are the first thing that comes up. And for a while, we weren't just the first thing that came up. Google did the thing where it just showed the table in the Google search results so that, you know, save everyone a click so that no one would ever need to give us any traffic.
Your greatest piece of SEO.
Yeah, except that Google for a long time made it so you didn't even have to click on the link to see it.
Well, you've taken that away, so it's your SEO is just working perfectly.
Yeah. So I would like an update on Turning Stone. Here's the question.
Yeah, we do say, do I smell bankruptcy to each other in chat all the time?
Turning Stone Casino in...
I've been, by the way.
Verona, New York, not New Jersey. 18 plus casino for one thing, right?
Yeah, I went when I was 18. It was, I'm pretty sure, the first casino I ever went to. Yeah, almost positive. First casino I've ever been to.
Turning Stone, by the way, has 5 different resorts: the Lodge, the Tower, the Hotel, Sandstone Hollow Inn. Anyways, let's just pick a random date at the hotel at Turning Stone. 2 guests, see the availability. I want to see like a $55 resort fee just so that I can email D back 5 years after the fact and be like, stick your resort fees in your ass to this casino, $50
resort fee. Smell bankruptcy.
Book 209 subtotal. Oh, rooms and taxes. No resort fee.
Oof.
Turning Stone.
TS Casino.
This is why we will choke on our resort fees and drown in the Atlantic.
So, clearly we have to become a TS Casino podcast.
We should.
Yeah.
TS Casino.
Like I said, I've been.
Mohegan Sun.
I won a lot of money at Let It Ride there, which is why I played Let It Ride like the first 10 times I went to a casino, and it never went well except for that literal first time.
Yeah. Sometimes that's dangerous, actually winning at a shitty game like that.
Yeah, let me tell you, there is no game shittier than Let It Ride, except for maybe Caribbean Stud, which is thankfully like basically gone now. So let me tell you, though, that shit was like the hot thing in like 2003 or whenever I went to Turning Stone.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I started going, I think in 2010, there was a lot of like Mississippi Stud, Caribbean Stud, Let It Ride. Like,
there's still
everywhere.
A lot of Caribbean Stud, though.
Yeah.
I thought it would be like on the way out by that. Certainly now it's like
you'd never
maybe
see it.
There's one table in Atlantic City or something. I feel like it basically doesn't exist anymore, which is good.
I feel like there just used to be a lot more like terrible carnival games. And I guess people have gotten wise. And
the only good thing about Caribbean Stud or Caribbean Stud that I remember is like you would put the dollar for the shit side bet like into like a slot and it would just like go down like a miniature golf ball into like this pit of dollars, I think.
That's great.
It's like no one's ever winning.
Awesome. That's great. They
yeah,
should
great.
Do like a like crazy mini golf where it like goes through some mousetrap sort of contraption and
yep.
Mousetrap board game.
Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. If you want to reach out to us or any of our other listeners, you can do so at our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/doforawin. Find all of our great content at doforawin.com. Reach out to Craig on Twitter at doforawin or me at Kyle Askin, and send Craig questions to doforawin@gmail.com. And maybe we'll read them on air. We always need more questions.
We are out of questions. We desperately need questions.
Ooh.
Yes.
Well, thank you everyone for sending them in, though. It's always appreciated. Guess I'll see you in a couple weeks, and we'll talk to everyone then. I'm glad that Paul's going to go if we go. Maybe. We can do some nice stuff. Maybe we can do like docs at some point too or something like that. Do things in Paul's wheelhouse. Well, everyone's wheelhouse except mine, probably.